Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, November 30th, 2018. I'm Sam Minter and Yvonne Bo is back again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
So let me start out with the agenda. We're going to talk about that incident that happened on the border. That's going to be our first segment. And then we've got Manafort and we've got Cohen. Like, for the last few weeks, we've been like, oh, no indictments. It's so boring, blah, blah, blah. Nothing's going on. Let's do a lightning round. This time, no. Well, we still no indictments this week, but we had some very interesting developments.
Well, it wasn't
we had a guilty plea. Guilty plea is not an indictment.
We went straight. We went straight to the guilty plea.
We had a guilty plea. We had and we had some developments in the Manafort case that are interesting. Now, of course, we are recording this time on Thursday night, East Coast time, which means that because that's what worked out in our schedules. But if something big drops on Friday, I'm going to have to insert one of those stupid notes at the beginning of the show saying, sorry, something happened after we recorded before I put it out, blah, blah, blah. Because things always seem to happen on Friday, which is why recently we've been recording more often on Friday evenings. But, you know, if something happens, something happens, and then you'll hear about it next week. Right. What can I say? So anyway, that's the plan. The thing at the border, Manafort and Cohen. That's the basic plan. Before we get into that, just a couple of quick things. First of all, you can hear the echo, which means I'm still at my dad's house. But the update for those who care, my dad came home from the hospital on Wednesday and he's doing great. He's, improving every day. And, just being home was a huge difference, like being out of the, no longer having all kinds of things attached to him at the hospital and the hospital gown and being, in regular clothes at home. He's feeling much better. Improvement is obvious every day. So he's doing great. And, I will leave to head home, back to Seattle to where I usually am instead of Washington, D.C. on Saturday. So that's the plan. And that's why you have an echo on me and sorry about the sound quality. You know, I should get a better or different portable mic for when I go on trips. Like this one's kind of cool. And I was telling Yvonne right before we recorded the show, I can make it sound better by getting a lot closer to the microphone like this. You guys can probably tell the difference. But the problem is, the way this microphone is situated is just really awkward to position it so I can actually talk with it that way without bending over and contorting myself in weird ways or developing some way to Yvonne was suggesting stack up a bunch of books and put it on top of the books or something. And I, whatever, Anyway, that's the agenda. So instead of doing anything else here, let's just jump right into it and start with the
jump.
Yeah, the thing at the border. So it almost seems like it was forever ago. But there was this thing where, one of the caravans reached the border and some people decided to rush the border and the Trump administration closed the border and used tear gas and blah, 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 blah. And so it was a big thing. And lots of people on both sides were making hay about it. On the Republican side, it was like, look, see all those people who said that the caravan would never make it and they weren't a threat. Look, they're trying to rush the border. That's not like legally applying for asylum the correct way. They're trying to like break in and they're trying to whatever. Meanwhile, the people on the left were like, look, we're tear gassing kids, blah, blah, blah. Isn't this awful? I think all of these are an incomplete picture of what's going on. I don't know. Yvonne, what are your thoughts to start with?
Well, look, you got to look at that crossing, right? There's on a daily basis, 100,000 people go through that border crossing. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. 100,000, right? So, this whole thing about, there was a lot that it seemed that was done by both sides on this thing in order to make this seem a lot, it made it seem like a lot worse than what it was, from both sides. One was from the Trump side, trumping up how these guys are arriving. Look, when you're talking about a group of people, several hundred, as far as I can tell, arriving to a border crossing where 100,000 people are crossing every day. I mean, give me a break. Okay. All right. You're making a lot of hay about nothing. Okay. At the same time, it seemed that a number of people from the migrant caravan were encouraged to go and rush the border to make a show of it. Okay. All right.
And I still haven't heard any reliable reporting on who was encouraging them to do that.
Right. I don't know who. I don't know.
Because here's the fundamental thing about this. Whoever is advising these migrants is giving them really freaking bad advice that's against their own interests and against the interests of their cause. You know, because A, like, let's just say, first of all, if you're intending to actually apply for asylum, you know, through the standard processes, then yeah, the administration is making it incredibly hard, but you know, you go wait in line and blah, blah, blah. Second, if you are planning on sneaking across the border, that's not the place to do it.
Correct. That is not even remotely the place to do it. I mean, doing the frontal assault into the border crossing is idiotic.
What do you really expect? Like a mass of you run against the border and somehow jump the fence and they don't, I don't see what the plan is with that. Like,
it was some people trying to make a show. Yes. I mean, and I'm not sure. I'm not really sure who encouraged them. I'm not sure if some right wingers tried to encourage them.
Oh, you started to say, and I figured you were going to say Soros.
No, whatever. I'm not sure who encouraged them to do that, but that was just it. And the thing is, seems to be for show now.
Let me just add this. Like if you are trying to, you know, I mentioned it's stupid because you're not going to get in because you're rushing the border and all that, but it's also stupid because if you're trying to encourage the cause of people being sympathetic to you and letting more people like you in, the way you do it is not to act to present like an angry horde. That's going to make more people scared of you.
Exactly. Yeah. Like an angry invading horde, which is what they wanted to portray them as. So that's that part. Now, the other thing is, and I know it pains me to say so, but it is true. It's not the first time that tear gas has been used at the border or anything, because some event has happened before.
And I believe there were some statistics that were put out first by people on the right, but confirmed by fact checkers like Snopes and others that, you know, over the course of the last, I think it was approximately 6 years, they didn't have stats going back further than that, but over the last 6 years or so, including, you know, the last few years of the Obama administration, tear gas has been used on the border almost once a month.
Yeah, I mean, the stats were, I pulled up the statistics on, let me be clear. In 2016, it was only done 3 times in the whole year.
Okay.
Right. That's it. But in some prior years, like 2012, 2013, it happened almost twice a month. Okay. Right. Now it was like 2012, 26 times, 2013, 27, 2014, 15. Then it declined down to only 8 in 2015. And then it was only 3 incidents. The reason for that drop, we do know that during the Obama administration, there had been a huge decline in a number of people trying to cross illegally from Mexico. So I'm going to guess that, you know, when you have like that decline, so that basically reduces number of incidents at the border, I guess. Right. So, you I know, mean, so
the point is, like, it seems like everybody's being disingenuous in this thing. And that's one of the things that is, like, you know, leaving me a little bit perplexed by the whole situation. You know, it seems very opportunistic on all sides. Everybody's playing an agenda. It doesn't seem like anybody's really and truly, you know, thinking about this from a, you know, hey, what's the problem here and what's the best way to solve it kind of point of view.
Yeah. No, that was definitely not part of the plan. You know, so in the end, I mean, look, this just, I mean, obviously, anytime that something like this happens is very unfortunate. And the fact that you go and see women being, you know, tear gassed in the middle of this, children being tear gassed, it is heartbreaking. I do think that the current administration has been, like, encouraging this kind of confrontation, because for them, it makes them look like this is what we're the horde that we're defending you against. Mm-hmm. You know, I really believe that they thrive on this.
Now, in terms of the who's encouraging them thing, are we talking like false flag conspiracy crap here? Or do we just think
I'm not talking about false flag? I mean, I'm not sure if there were certain people that just decided at the border to go and just encourage them, you know, to go and do either. Somebody did encourage them. I'm not sure. I don't know who. I have no idea. I mean, I really don't. I could say any of 100 different theories. I have no idea who did it. The thing that I feel is that it doesn't matter who did it. They were doing it to try to play to some advantage that they thought that they would get from doing so.
Yeah. Well, and I'm trying to figure out, like, well, who benefited from this situation? I think the most obvious benefit is sort of the anti-immigrant side, to be honest. Yeah. Now, we also had a lot of play to, oh, look at the poor tear gassed woman and her child.
Right.
Which, yeah, look, I feel that. But I think if you
that image play, I mean, look, they got a lot of negative publicity was gained.
Although even with that, if you look carefully at the picture, there are people in the background that are calmly milling around. There's photographers in the background with a tripod set up. You know, it's a striking image, but I don't think it's a complete picture of what was going on either. And it's also being, you know, used to push a certain point of view. Now, it's not to minimize what happened to that woman and her kids at all.
What we're saying is what the hell are people trying to do with this situation, which is an unfortunate situation. Look, we've talked about this. This whole thing right now, migrant caravans have happened over many years. There's now this huge focus now by Trump that has put all the spotlight on something that is an occurrence that has happened for I don't know how long. You talk about migrant caravans. Look, I remember when I was living back in Puerto Rico, and I think I've mentioned this on the show. We used to get daily arrivals of, like, overloaded boats that were arriving from Dominican Republic with illegal immigrants when things were very, very difficult mm-hmm. in the Dominican Republic in the 80s and 90s. Loaded boats, you know, hundreds. They would just arrive to some point on the shore, and they would just all just be dumped over there and just rush someplace on the shore. Daily occurrence.
Right.
This is not abnormal of, like, people trying to come to the United States. It's been happening for since the pilgrims, for God's sakes. The first mm-hmm. ones to do it. It's so
well and it's been pointed out as well, like, you know, the line is, hey, they're gonna come, they're gonna apply for asylum, blah blah blah. And while there certainly are people who are fearing for their life and would be eligible for asylum, there are other people there who are migrating because of poverty, which is not considered a legitimate claim for asylum.
I mean, most of these people, you know, you
and I are on record of saying that, you know, just in general, we think immigration should be much more open. But like, whoever, again, the notion of people coming and applying for asylum, most of them wouldn't qualify anyway.
Well, a lot of people that are coming, especially from Honduras and Salvador, are coming from some of the places with the worst violence in this fucking planet. You know, these are not just economic migrants.
Right.
These are people fleeing.
I apologize. I shouldn't have used the word most.
You know. Yeah, these are people fleeing really serious, drastic situations. Look at what's happening in Venezuela right now, for Christ's sakes. There's starvation. It is the most violent country on earth. I mean, these are – look, Venezuela and I think it was either Honduras or El Salvador right now are at the top three of the most violent countries on earth, for God's sakes. Of course they're looking – I mean, yeah, they qualify for asylum right now. Hey, so – And
a lot,
by the way,
a lot do, Venezuela, a lot probably don't.
A lot of them probably do that are fleeing that kind of violence. Mm-hmm. Let me ask, in the case of Central America, the worst thing is that in a lot of cases we really contributed to the messed up situation that those countries are in the first place. So. Not Venezuela. Venezuela is definitely their own doing. Okay, that's, you know, no doubt about that one. But in Central America, definitely, the U.S. was a big reason why the situation is as dire as it is. And so, yeah.
So we kind of owe them.
Yeah, we do.
Now, let me ask this, sort of veering a little bit from the original issue of what happened last week. But one of the things I've heard repeatedly is that the Mexicans have said, you can stay here. But they're still trying to come to the U.S., at least for some of these people in the caravan. First of all, is that even true? And second of all, if it is true, why wouldn't that be a viable option?
Well, I actually not sure that I've heard that is not totally, they've talked about it, but they've never agreed on anything to that right now at this point. And the new president of Mexico still has not taken office.
Right. A couple more weeks, right?
Yeah. A couple of more weeks over there. The length of time, the lame duck period is crazy. Okay. It's 6 months. Okay, from election to
an office. And I thought ours was exceedingly long.
Right. No, it's 6 months. The Mexico election was in June. Okay, so I don't. Nobody over there right now really believes that any decision that is made right now
will stick.
Is that it's exactly correct. So that's why I don't think that offer is anything of a serious offer of any sort.
Now, if it was, do you think that these folks would be wise to take them up on that? I mean, it's clear under the current administration that, you know, they want to slam the door shut.
I mean, they keep trying, but they keep failing at it. I mean, they've taken a whole bunch of drastic actions and so forth, but I mean, look, if you're legitimately trying to claim asylum, I don't think that is a good idea for you to do that.
To do what? Stay in Mexico?
In Mexico. Yeah. You need to follow the process.
Well, no, I guess the question was not stay in Mexico while you apply for asylum, because actually to apply for asylum, you have to actually be in the country. There's no mechanism to do it remotely.
Exactly. No, that's the problem.
I guess the question is, what about staying in Mexico permanently instead of trying to migrate to the U.S.?
The violence right now on the border
is pretty bad in Mexico too.
Mexican cartels is like out of control. Look, yesterday, let me be clear. Yesterday, I went to send somebody to a state of a small state in Mexico to go inspect something. And when I went and I told them about driving that, well, be careful you don't drive at night because there's serious violence on the roads on that in that space. It needs to be done in the daylight. I'm like, oh my God. I really had not considered that that was going to be a problem.
Mm.
Okay, so that's how bad that is. So no, really, no, not really. You know, staying in Mexico, not really helping the issue that much.
Yeah, and speaking of that sort of thing, I have a relative who lives in Mexico, and they mentioned at one point, you know, oh yeah, we're having trouble with our neighbor drug dealers. You know, it's like, yeah,
well, oh, there you go. Well,
they have a compound and they're doing this or that and whatever. You know,
I'm pounding it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I left this week with these events at the border in a sense of confusion, I guess, because
whole damn thing was a fucking show.
Right.
This was a show. This is a show from the beginning, not from the migrants that were trying to come so much, but from how Trump made it into, and then other people packed onto it in order to try to gain some publicity advantage in one way or another. Not sure which one.
Right.
I don't know for certain, but that's certainly what happened. And you know,
the one thing I wish from all of this is like we keep saying, like who is pushing these people to operate in this way? Because really and truly, if your fundamental goal in the end was to get into US, maybe you'd go together with a caravan like halfway through Mexico or somewhere, but then you'd split up and you'd go to the parts of the border that are less fortified and you'd try to sneak in, or you'd do a boat or try to catch a plane or whatever. You'd try to do other ways. You wouldn't like in mass all go to Tijuana. You know, that's just not what you would do. I wish there was. And maybe there is, but I would really like to see some in-depth investigative reporting of people embedded with these caravans to try to figure out who the fuck is driving that and why are they doing it this way? Because it doesn't make any sense for the people actually in the caravan. Like, this is not the way to get the result you want.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. I agree. Okay. I definitely agree on that one.
Anything else to say about immigration, Yvonne, or should we take a break and move on to all the Russia stuff?
Russia again. Yeah, baby. Let's move on to Russia.
Okay. We'll be back right after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, here we are. Let's start with Paul Manafort because it happened first. Even though, like, I admit this is another one of those weeks where the Manafort stuff happened a couple days ago, so it's already fading from my memory.
I mean, I gotta admit that, you know, so I've had a pretty busy week, you know, dealing with, like, I don't know, like all of a sudden I had to deal with that, some other crazy stuff, you know, so I go, I see this whole Manafort thing, right?
So describe what it was.
Just like, so my understanding is that Mueller basically decided that after reviewing what had happened since the plea agreement that they had had with Mueller, that that Manafort had basically violated the plea agreement, and that one of the things that he had done is continued to had lied and not cooperated as the plea agreement required him to do so.
And I think even more so than that, Mueller said that he violated the plea agreement by committing more felonies.
Correct. Yes. By committing more crimes. Which is just, you know, it seems like it's Manafort's style.
It absolutely matches everything. Okay, I'll get into more there, but you were going to say when you first heard about it.
I thought it was just, I'm like, I have never seen somebody behave in such a cavalier fashion, make it a plea agreement. Usually, most people that make a plea agreement actually behave more like Cohen has. Which is, yep, oh, I did it. Oh, I'm testifying. Yep, I'm saying what the heck's going on. That's what they do. I mean, this guy is like, to be blunt, almost like emboldened. Okay? To just be even more of a criminal. It feels like.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember, even before his plea agreement, there was the thing where he was out, you know, on house arrest or whatever, but they threw him in actual jail when he was trying to do witness tampering.
Correct. He was trying to do witness tampering. He was using encrypted email. He was trying to just get around all the restrictions that had been placed on him while he was out. Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently that kind of thing continued afterwards. And specifically, it relates to Manafort and Trump and a whole bunch of other witnesses in this whole thing. I think I saw there was a quote of Rudy Giuliani or something said that there's like 38 Mueller witnesses that are all together in a, you know, mutual defense pact. Okay. Right. And that's not automatically unusual. What is unusual is that typically if somebody, you know, decides to cooperate with the government like Manafort did, then that gets dropped.
Correct.
They're no longer in that mutual defense pact or whatever. Yeah. But apparently Manafort kept those arrangements intact. And so what was happening the entire time he was talking to Mueller is that Manafort's lawyers were reporting back to Trump's lawyers on exactly what Mueller was asking Manafort and what answers Manafort was giving.
Right.
And
I mean, I can only see one reason for this. There's only one reason.
Okay.
There is only one.
The pardon.
Of course. There is no other reason.
Yes, and Trump and his team have repeatedly mentioned pardons and leaked that people are thinking about pardons. And this week, after this came out, Donald Trump was quoted as saying, why would I take a pardon off the table? That would be stupid.
Right.
You know, and so this whole thing now, part of what is being implied here, and by the way, the thing that Mueller filed, and it was actually a joint filing by Mueller and Manafort's defense, was basically saying, hey, because this cooperation isn't really happening, let's move straight to the sentencing phase. And Mueller said, when we get to that sentencing phase, I'm going to lay out all the details of what Manafort's
basically, we're going for the max. They're like that, you know.
No, but the important part is they may go for the max, whatever. But Mueller says he's going to lay out the details of exactly what Manafort was lying about. Okay. And so Marcy Wheeler, who's Empty Wheel on Twitter, and various others have speculated that, hey, this is the backdoor way for Mueller to essentially put things into the public domain that he wants to put into the public domain. Because he can do these sort of reports in the legal filings and just spill more and more details about what he knows when he feels it's appropriate to do so. And right. So when we get to the sentencing, expect to see some very interesting things come out of that. But it'll be interesting to see precisely what Manafort is lying about. I think it's going to be the kinds of things that we can imagine because, we've said for a long time, the general outlines of this seem to have been pretty clear for like at least a year now. It's just that we're getting more and more details and confirmation of exactly what happened. So to move it beyond, here's probably what happened because these things are sort of lining up and they're this, deniability so that everybody on the right is like, that's nothing, And what Mueller is doing is just stacking up the evidence that shows, this actually did happen. And yes, they knew what they were doing. And yes, they knew it was against the law and blah, 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 blah. And he's just...
But look, here's the other thing about this. Look, when I was talking about the sentencing about going to the max, look, usually for any sentence, you get a pre-sentence report, okay? Mm-hmm. All right. So this report is created, gathering all this information about – the crime, the track record of the person, any cooperation and so forth. And they put all this stuff together in order to arrive. And they used to do, I don't know if they still do these points, but there were these points that would wind up with these, because there was these sentencing guidelines. Mm-hmm. And they would indicate what kind of sentence this person should have based on all this criteria. And this was used by the judge in order to arrive at the sentence. The thing is that the things that he is doing like right now, prior to a sentencing report, are the kind of things that basically just would completely fuck you. Okay, what kind of sentence you would get? This is not behavior that is going to make that sentencing report be any favorable whatsoever. This is just throw the book at you sentence, okay? There is no way that this guy gets granted any leniency whatsoever.
Right.
There are no mitigating factors at all. The guy has continued to just be – not only has not cooperated, not honored the pleas, done more criminal activity. I mean, it's nuts. It's just nuts.
Well, and as folks have pointed out, I mean, with this cooperation deal, he might have gotten out of this with a fairly light sentence – and, serve a year or something. Sure. and get out and see his family, blah, blah, blah. He's, he's an old enough person.
With basically being in jail for the rest of his life.
Yeah, because we're talking, enough years that given the typical human life expectancy, there's a good chance he would not be even eligible for bail before he dies.
Yeah.
I guess maybe if he lives to be 90 or something, but
that's possible. But, he's basically either a life sentence or close to it.
Yeah. And so the notion here is that he fully expects that he's doing that. I mean, look, the theory is that this whole reporting, defense agreement, reporting back, blah, blah, blah. The notion here is that, hey, I'm basically a spy for you inside the Mueller investigation, reporting back to the president's lawyers to let you know what he knows and what he doesn't know. And quid pro quo, in exchange, when this is all over, you're going to pardon me and I get off scot-free.
Wink, 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 wink.
And,
I have never in my life had ever heard anything so insane.
Now,
never, ever.
Well, and people are talking, did Manafort think he was going to get away with this? And maybe, if he gets pardoned, maybe he still will. I don't know. But the thing is, look. Dangling pardons in front of people was one of the articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon. and so you get people like Giuliani saying, "Well, there's an unlimited power of pardon, and there's no restrictions. The president can do whatever he wants." Blah blah blah. Yes, theoretically, but
that doesn't mean that he can't be impeached for it.
It doesn't mean that he can't be impeached for it. And you know, there's questions about whether other actions could be taken either during the presidency or after as well. It's unclear because, you know, the notion that, you know, like, yes, the president has the unlimited power to pardon, but just to take an extreme example, does that mean that the president would be free to sell pardons to the highest bidder?
Well, I mean, if you give Trumpy that idea by Trump, I mean, we freaking have a freaking broadcast right now on a TV channel right now doing this. If you give him that idea, yeah, I mean, it'd be like Home Shopping Network for pardons.
Yeah. I mean, there has to be sort of a logical limit there. I mean, all of this, of course, would be tested. If such a thing came to pass, it would be tested in the courts. It would be tested whether the Congress would do it.
Let the investigations begin. Look, I just saw a news flash as we were talking over here from BuzzFeed News, saying that the House Intelligence Committee will investigate the Trump Organization's plan to give Vladimir Putin a $50 million penthouse, which is something else that we haven't talked about.
Yeah, that came up related to the Cohen. Well, it came up right after the Cohen stuff. It's sort of tied in. So I was going to mention that in the next segment. Right. But yeah. The investigations will begin. Here's the thing, though.
Let's see. The real investigations will begin. Yeah. Okay. All right. Because, you know, not more of this Devin Nunes, you know, horse shit, you know, sham. Okay. All right. That shit is soon to be over. Okay. Right.
But you still have the issue of, unless you get to the point where Republicans start flipping, you're not going to convict in the Senate. Now,
I mean, it depends on what's uncovered. I mean,
yes. Here's the fundamental thing, and I mentioned this before. The one way in which you might see Republicans start flipping on this is you get a massive Democratic win, which we have now had.
So
the Republicans start seeing Donald Trump as a liability. Correct. And, public support amongst Republican primary voters for him starts to drop. We haven't seen that yet, but we've seen the first one. And so, you know, if you get Republican senators starting to be scared and starting to think that Donald Trump is actually bringing them down, then you might see some starting to flip. If you combine that with really hard, undeniable evidence, like of the kind that Mueller is slowly but surely producing. Like, because so far with everything we've seen, the Republicans have still been able to say, this is really nothing. It's arguing about process stuff. There's nothing real here, you know, witch hunt, you know, or it's all these, you know, yeah, it's Manafort, but that had nothing to do with Donald Trump, you know, or whatever. They've been able to say things like this. If you get to the point where that's just blatantly, falsifiably, undeniable evidence, it becomes harder to do that. I'm not saying they can't do that. In order for the, you know, Republican senators to actually start flipping on Donald Trump, you have to have all of these things. You have to have, you know, hard, incontrovertible evidence.
We're getting pretty close to that.
Yeah. We're getting closer, but we're you can hear, you know, the Republican reactions to things this week and know we're not there yet. But you'd have to have the hard evidence. You have to have them.
Well, look, the Republican reactions this week, to be honest, were thundering silence.
Yes.
I mean, give me a break. They were. Yes. I mean, they were just absolutely just in shock. So, you know, so I don't really know what the hell they're thinking.
Yeah.
Clamped up.
You need to have the Republican primary voters flip. You need to have the people in Congress scared of their own positions, and you need to have the evidence. If you have all three of those together, then you maybe you get something. But until then, we're still talking about, you know, hey, the 2020 election is how you get rid of Trump, not anything before then.
Or a heart attack.
Yes, you keep mentioning the heart attack possibility. It is certainly out there. You could get more. Yeah, he's clearly stressed.
He's exactly.
But yeah, no. But we're this Manafort stuff, like, and before we even get to Cohen in the next segment, the Manafort stuff is evidence right now of ongoing obstruction of justice. Like, we're not talking about the 2016 campaign. We're talking about every single fucking day.
Yep.
Trump and his folks are doing everything they can to derail this investigation. But they're not doing it like, you know, Donald Trump has said a few times, hey, you know, if somebody comes after me, I'm pushing back. I'm fighting back. That's all I'm doing is fighting back. And then
he threatened to do some insane things. I mean, just things that didn't make any sense. I still don't understand what the hell he means when this thing is like, well, if they start investigating me, I got to declassify all of this stuff. And I'm like, how's that? Okay, so who is that helping?
Well, yeah. I mean,
how does, I mean, I don't understand how that makes any sense.
I guess the theory is that he's got classified stuff on people that are involved in an investigation that shows that they had an agenda in going after him. And so therefore the investigation is biased and therefore invalid. I don't think it works, but I think that's the theory.
I mean, that's, you know, but well, look, in reality is, as everything else that he does, which is just this massive amount of, like, bluster of, like, stuff, it's just throwing around, it's just saying anything in this crazy word salad that makes me sound like a incredibly coherent and, like, cogent individual. Because, I mean, every time that he talks about any of this stuff, you can't decipher anything of what the hell he's trying to say or mean. I mean, he gave that crazy interview the other day, the one to the Washington Post, right?
Yes.
And you tried to read the transcript, as Sam tries to do every time, and you're going through it, and it's just like, it's...
I can't make it through his interviews. Like, I read part of it, I try, and I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. It's not just like he's saying stuff I disagree with. It's not just that he's saying stuff that isn't true. It's that it literally, like, the sentences don't come together in a coherent way. It's just rambling.
It's you know, look, I've heard rambling. This is like...
Yeah, we ramble every show.
Sure, exactly. I do tons of rambling. I'm the master rambler. But this guy, the stuff that he's saying, I mean, it's just, it's incoherent rambling. I mean, there's just nothing in there that you're like, I mean, what did he say? I mean, some of the quotes were just
the oceans hilarious. Are small, Yvonne.
Right. The oceans are small. Let's see, like this one, right? And I'm not blaming anybody, but I'm just telling you, I think that the Fed is way off base with what they're doing, number one. Number two, a positive note, we're doing very well on trade. We're doing very well. Our companies are very strong. Don't forget, we're still up from when I came in, 38% or something, you know? It's tremendous. It's a tremendous. Not like we're up and we're much stronger and we're much more liquid. And the banks are now much more liquid during my tenure. And I'm not playing the same rules as Obama. Obama had zero interest to worry about. We're paying interest, a lot of interest. He wasn't paying down. We're talking about $50 billion lots of different times, paying down and knocking out liquidity. Well, Obama didn't do that. And just so you understand, I'm playing a normalization economy, whereas he is playing a free economy. It's easy to make money when you're paying no interest. It's easy to make money when you're not doing any pay downs. So you can't. And despite that, the numbers we have are phenomenal numbers. Look, this is an incoherent, insane statement that if you take some of the stuff there, anything that he said, it shows that he has absolutely no understanding about interest rates and how government debt works and our budget. Nothing. He understands nothing. That's all you could get from this. It's all like, I mean, just ignore it. And this one isn't even the worst one, to be honest with you. This was actually,
that one actually was
not that bad. He said far worse than that in the interview. So let me see. There was like some others. When you're talking about an atmosphere, oceans are very small and it blows over and it sails over. I mean, we take thousands of tons of garbage off our beaches all the time that comes over from Asia. It just floats right down the Pacific. It flows.
Something's flowing.
Flowing. It's flowing. All right.
So, look, back to Manafort and all of this stuff. I mean, the bottom line is that we're seeing continued crimes by people in this administration this week, constantly. Like the
related to this administration, maybe Manafort's not inside.
But I mean, like the whole pardon dangling is potentially like an impeachable offense right there.
Correct.
Yeah. Yes. Like, again, like that was one of the articles of impeachment against Richard Nixon. You know. And it's continuous. It's all the time. And this is part of why, like, you know, we're sort of these things keep rolling off us because it's constant. It's nonstop. There is more stuff all the time. And, you know, when people look at it and they're like, well, you know, we're looking at what happened in, you know, early 2016 and blah, blah, blah. Yes. And when we talk about Cohen, it's more concentrated on that time frame. But with this Manafort stuff, we're talking about things that are happening now. We're talking about obstruction of justice that is happening in front of our eyes right now. You know, it's not just, you know, the firing of Comey and stuff like that at the beginning of the administration. It's ongoing. It's been ongoing the whole damn time. You know, and if you really have, if you can show, and I think we're, you know, people say like, you know, if we found a secret recording of Donald Trump talking about pardons, then it would be considered a smoking gun damning piece of evidence. But because he goes out and tweets the damn thing or says it in front of the helicopter when he's heading off for the summit, you know, people are like, well, there can't be anything wrong with that. He just said it on live TV.
God, yeah. Well,
so he that's not how you commit crimes. You commit crimes in secret.
I mean, look, he's the one that proposed about that he could shoot a person Fifth Avenue, get away with it, right? Then he'd be up on the polls. That's right. So,
and he's showing it.
Yes,
he's been showing it for 3 years now that he's, yep, you know, all this stuff has no impact on any damn thing. Well, yeah, hey, the Democrats did just take the House, so I shouldn't
say that. They took the House at the margin as the count continues.
It keeps going up.
Yeah. It was a blue wave. It was really a very strong, I mean, showing. I mean, apparently,
hey, this was a historic win for the Republicans, Yvonne. It's a historic win for the Republicans. They gained 2 seats in the Senate.
Wow! Thank you. Wow, that's amazing. You know, by such wide margins as well. Obviously, you know, they really, you know, there were no nail biters in any red states whatsoever.
Shall we move on to Cohen?
Cohen.
Okay, let's take a break. We'll talk about Cohen and then overall implications of all this stuff. Back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready.
Frankenstein, then. Let us begin.
Creepy Classics celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we are back. And Yvonne, before we start talking about Cohen, I just wanted to mention one other thing. You know, usually when we record these shows, you're in Florida on the East Coast. I was going to say I'm in California, but I don't live in California.
Seattle.
No, I'm near Seattle. I'm on the West Coast. And so our normal time for recording these is 8 p.m. my time, but 11 p.m. your time. Correct. This time, I'm on the East Coast as well, and we are doing it at the quote-unquote normal time at 11 p.m. And I'm like, how the hell do you do this every week, Yvonne? I'm tired. I'm ready to go to bed. Like, I've been up all day. I'm like, while I was waiting for Yvonne to be ready to do the show, like, I was like, okay, I gotta stay awake. I would like.
Well, it has happened, like, on this show, and probably, you know, we do have a supercut of me, cursing. There has been, not very frequently, but there's been a couple of them where I've fallen asleep and I'm just snoring away. Especially, I think it was the worst time is like when we had debates. We're trying to listen to a damn debate. I mean, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, I'm trying to listen to a debate during like Mystery Science Theater, you know, 3000, you know, and I'm like, come on. And I'm sitting over there, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I'll just close my eyes for a couple of minutes. I mean, they're just talking bullshit, you know. And then, yeah. But yeah.
No, because I'm like, I'm ready for bed. You know, at local time while we're recording, it's 5:23 UTC as we're recording this, but that's 12:23 in the morning on Friday morning, East Coast time. And I'm like,
I got home last night. I didn't go to, that's right. I forgot. I didn't go to sleep last night until like almost like 1:30 in the morning either too, because I landed last night from coming back from Mexico, and which I didn't even mention because we didn't. You know, we went and jumped straight into the show this week. We didn't actually banter on anything, but yeah. We went at, they did hassle me at immigration in Mexico a lot more than normal. I will tell you that.
Yvonne, I told you not to make a run for the wall.
Yeah, I know, you know, but oh well. You know, it's one of those things. I just had to make a run for it. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, so they hassled you trying to get into Mexico?
Yes, they did hassle me going into Mexico. They actually went and, like, typically, they asked for my documents more. Usually, you go to immigration, and then you get through customs. And at customs, they don't ask you for passport and stuff and whatever, whatnot. But they did not just ask me for my passport as well. They wanted to see even a copy of my boarding pass. They let's just say that they were quite a lot more stringent than the norm. And I've seen this before when the U.S. has done something at the border, like before in other countries. A number of years back, they did something to people traveling from Brazil where they made it a lot more strict, and the Brazilians just basically retaliated. Anybody coming from the U.S. just basically had to go through the same or worse. Kind of like a review. So it's, I guess it's just the standard that, like, in diplomacy like that, that they just, that this is the type of retaliation that you get.
I find it more surprising that Trump let you back in.
Ah, well, you know, thank God. Yes, I was allowed to come back. So.
Okay. So Michael Cohen.
Yes.
So Thursday morning, apparently, you know, something was placed on the docket in some court, and a few reporters got phone calls saying, you might want to be here for this. It was listed as a John Doe versus United States or something like that, or United States versus John Doe, whatever, I forget. But when they got there, they found out that, you know, some of the people from Mueller's staff were in the courtroom, And then Michael Cohen walks in. And then it's a guilty plea for lying to Congress. And so there are a few things that are interesting about this. One, as usual with some of these Mueller things, no one expected a damn thing. I mean, we've all been expecting
right.
something's going to happen from Mueller sometime soon. But right. this particular thing was on nobody's radar. Nobody was thinking, Cohen's going to plead guilty to more shit.
Right.
You know? Second, people have generally thought that lying to Congress is something that in order for the FBI or the Justice Department or whoever to go after it, Congress needs to make a referral and say, hey, we want to prosecute this guy because he lied to us. Congress had made no such referral because, of course, Republicans doing their thing. Mueller's like, that doesn't matter. I know he lied to Congress. It's a law. I'm going after him for it. You know, but this also, though, from Mueller's point of view, is another place where, like we were talking about the Mueller sentencing filings, like adding this charge to Cohen does nothing to Cohen. He's already pled guilty to a bunch of stuff. This one additional felony will not add anything substantial to his sentencing guidelines. The plea deal will already be lenient on him because he's cooperating.
Right. So
what does this add on top of it? And the answer is two things. One, it sends a clear message from Mueller once again, you know, don't fuck with me, you know. But second, it gives him another chance to, in the documentation for this plea deal, lay out a whole bunch of facts and put them into the public domain that now he's ready to reveal. And so right. in this case, the particular thing that was revealed that Cohen lied to Congress about was the extent of involvement in this Trump Tower Moscow deal in terms of A, how long that was going on, because apparently it was going on for months and months after he'd previously said it was over. Second, they'd previously maintained that, you know, basically Cohen was doing this stuff on his own and that the Trump family had nothing to do with it or very little to do with it. And in this statement, he basically says, oh yeah, I kept all of them up to date. And they were involved. They were part of this process. And this starts to tie together the whole theory of, you know, the collusion, as we're talking, is that there were interests between the Trumps and the Russians that coincided, and that there were financial interests that may make Donald Trump want to do what the Russians want to do. B, that they may have some sort of leverage over him in one way or another. And of course, then the exchange of information. Now, part of this is all of the same people that were involved in this Trump Tower deal are potentially involved in the information warfare and hacking DNC and all this kind of stuff. There are connections there through the fact that in terms of the Trump Tower deal, they were dealing with high up Russian government officials who would have been potentially privy to both.
Right.
And one of the things that was not revealed in that initial document, but came out in a BuzzFeed report later, was one of the people that Cohen was talking to, and I'm going to forget the name, but it's Putin's press secretary. And I heard somebody earlier today saying, look, you hear press secretary, you think Sarah Sanders. That's not the kind of thing it is. Basically, this guy is Putin's right-hand man. He's involved in all kinds of things all over the place and potentially was one of the key masterminds behind the information warfare efforts and all of this kind of stuff. And so you're starting to build this nexus between Donald Trump, Donald Trump's family, high government officials on a deal that they were trying to keep secret, where Donald Trump would have made a lot of money. And you start seeing like the dotted lines are forming that you need to show collusion. And
right.
And of course, collusion's not a real word. We're really talking conspiracy.
You mean real crime, but yeah.
Yes, yes. It is a real word, obviously.
It is a real word, yeah.
It's not like... Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's not itself a crime. Conspiracy is the crime, but we're building up these connections, and apparently the White House is completely freaked out by this latest set of Cohen stuff, because, you know, it's tearing apart all of the narratives that they've done. I mean, the one pattern that you see over and over and over here is that, you know, you go from somebody brings up an allegation, the Trump folks all deny it, then something comes out that shows that here's some evidence. And then they're like, well, okay, maybe that happened, but it didn't really matter.
Right. And then or that's allowed. It's legal.
Yeah, it's anyway. Allowed. Yeah, which is exactly what Donald Trump said here. Is so what if I was, you know, doing a deal for Trump Tower? I'm a businessman. I was working on it. Well, the so what from it is because he was asked about Russian relationships and in fact, about this Trump Tower thing many times over the campaign, and he said there was nothing.
I have no business interest in Moscow or Russia, blah, 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 blah. He said it over and over.
He said it at one of the debates on the same day he signed the letter of intent on this Trump Tower deal.
Right.
You know, and look, we've heard bits and pieces of that before. We knew about the letter of intent. We knew it was signed on the day of a debate, et cetera. What we're hearing here is now his closest confidant giving up the goods on this information, you know, and presumably, and here's part of what people are counting on for these kinds of things too. If Mueller is going for the conviction on this lie, it's not just because, you know, Cohen decided to cooperate and said, oh, you know what I said before? It was a lie. Why don't you slap another felony on me?
Right.
It's because Mueller has documentation that's a lie. Every single time that he's done something like this, there have been, you know, emails and phone records and this and that. And it's like, you know, it's not just he's going to be like, oh, well, this person said that you were lying the first time you said it. So blah, blah, blah. No. He's got all the pieces of evidence lined up in a row to show all of this stuff. And, you know, look, this one thing is also, okay, this is one lie about a relatively small thing. They added this one charge for Cohen. And I shouldn't say relatively small, because it does show all of these connections. But the clear implication is there's more. This is just what we want to reveal right now.
Right.
And maybe he's bluffing, but so far it hasn't seemed like he's been doing a lot of bluffing.
I haven't seen much bluffing.
You know, so I don't know. Some of the quotes that came out of this, I've seen a couple different reporters now say that they've talked to people on the White House staff who are absolutely stunned by this. Can't believe it happened. But more to the point, they're like, and before today, we didn't believe Donald Trump had Russian interests.
Somewhat deluded.
Well, here's the thing. You know, you're either incredibly stupid, which I wouldn't put beyond any White House staffer that's still
exactly.
there at this point.
Correct.
Or, yeah, you are so much in that bubble that you honestly believe this is all made up bullshit that of people trying to smear the president, and it's all a big conspiracy and none of it's true.
I mean, I'm sure that there are some believers, true believers, that believe that. I mean, it doesn't matter what evidence you show in front of them. They will say that. Then you've got other people like Giuliani that are just opportunists, and they're just like, whatever, I'm just, you know, I'll just spew any lie just to get whatever the hell I want.
Well, and Giuliani's another one that every time he fucking comes on TV seems to admit to more wrongdoing.
Oh, well, you know, that's apparently his MO. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just, yeah. We killed that person. I mean, you know, thank God he's not defending a murderer or something. Oh, yeah, that guy, we killed him, too. Yes. Oh, yeah. It was just, you know, it was just an accident. Yeah. We put 3 bullets in his face. It was, they were accidental bullets, you know. You know, the trigger, you know.
Well, and another aspect that we probably should mention here is that both of these things, the Manafort change in status and this Cohen thing, happen within a few days of Donald Trump officially submitting his written answers to Mueller's questions.
Oh, that's got to be a coincidence, obviously.
About all of... And these questions, by the way, were not about the obstruction of justice part of things. These questions were all related to this Russia stuff and to the Trump Tower deal and this and that. So, you know.
It's all a coincidence. I don't know why you're reading anything.
This is where the perjury trap comes in, Yvonne.
The perjury trap. The perjury trap.
Mueller was waiting to get Donald Trump's answers before revealing that he actually knew the answers to the questions that he was asking Donald Trump. And that's a trick. If Donald Trump said something that wasn't actually true, that's a perjury trap, Yvonne.
The perjury trap. The perjury trap. Okay. The perjury trap, of course. Right. I forgot about the perjury.
So specifically in this case, there were questions related to what Donald Trump knew when about the Trump Tower arrangement. And Giuliani has said, well, we get conflicting things from the Trump folks as usual. Donald Trump, of course, said that Cohen is lying about everything to get a reduced sentence. Giuliani said that at first, but then later said, yeah, but everything that is in the answers that were submitted by Trump match exactly what Cohen said in his testimony.
So, I mean, okay. So, which is it?
Well, see, here's the thing.
I mean, so they both lied together? What?
Well, because also, yes, if he was lying, then why would they match what the president said? Because then the president is lying too.
Admitting something that he didn't want to admit. What? I mean, what kind of nonsense?
Or of course, if they do both match and they're both the truth now, then of course that confirms that the president was lying earlier.
Correct.
You know, because what... this is... I don't know. I keep finding myself speechless because this stuff is so blatant and so bad. And not only that, but these guys are so incompetent at it.
I mean, the whole thing, let's be clear about this. I never heard anybody use this term of like perjury trap like Giuliani does. I mean, look, perjury trap is only a problem if you're a moron, okay? basically, that you're going in and you're just flat out lying, okay?
Donald Trump said specifically, they go after things like asking you what the weather was on the day that you did this, and you say, well, it was 72, and they're like, no, it was 71, damn it, perjury!
That actually would not never go.
Yes, I know.
That would not meet the burden to code like you get somebody a conviction, you know, based on that. You know, that's not what you know this whole thing is. I mean, I do think some people interpret it that way, but that's not what they're trying to do. I mean, they're trying to get the inconsistencies as to what, you know, one of the reasons why they send the questions, they make them over and over, is in order to try to make sure that you get a full picture of what it is, because as I've said before, any questions sometimes, depending on how the question is understood, what the details are, some people give varying answers and so forth on something, right? You know, it's like, I'm trying to think of some that would be, but it's like, did you ever talk about a project in Russia? Okay. I'm like, when did you talk about it? How did you talk about it? Who did you, you know, if you don't specifically ask, did you talk to Trump about it? Did you talk, you know, how you get those answers? And that's what you get in these questionnaires. The questionnaires, sometimes they're very repetitive in that way. In order to make sure that every question gets asked in every different angle, in order to make sure that you don't wind up in those traps. But the thing is that, look, from what we've heard from Trump all along, they're just blatant lies. It's not semantics. It's not this, you know, it's not any of this horse shit. The guy just repeatedly has been blatantly lying all the time, consistently, about everything. Giuliani can scream this all he wants. He's just using this in order to rile up his supporters, saying that he's being entrapped in some way or whatever, when all that's happening is that, you know, he's got a client who's just a fucking liar.
A liar and a criminal.
And a criminal, yes.
I want to say it again. It's just so blatant, and they're so incompetent. They're so bad at this. It's like they're not even good criminals.
No, they're really bad. Yeah,
you know. So what do we think? What's the next step here? What's going on? The Don Jr. indictment, Roger Stone? Where do we think this is going next?
And I do think that.
Do we think Trump's actually going to drop some pardons?
What's the other guy? The Stone buddy who refused the plea deal also. But that also happened this week.
Yes.
What was it? Corsi?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yes.
Yeah. And he also was like going around, and I guess he's also a guy that they've got a joint, you know, defense agreement with too, which was something like, I mean, the guy has joint defense agreements with everybody and his mother, for God's sakes. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, you know, I've just never seen anything like
this. Well, and it seems clear a good part of this is the trying to gather intelligence about what Mueller has, because they're getting reports back from all these witnesses on what they're being questioned about.
Yeah, let's see. Jerome Corsi says, I might die in jail for helping Trump. Let's see. This was the whole Assange. Well, we forgot about this.
This is Julian Assange and
Assange Manafort thing. That's right. Corsi originally told the special counsel's office that a communication with Stone did not take place. He now claims he forgot about them.
Yes. I think there are going to be a lot of people with bad memories.
Yeah, the memories are awful. Even if Julian Assange has stolen material that was classified, as a journalist, I can see him. I can get that material and I can publish it, and I'm not committing a crime, Corsi told the network. So I was happy to do it, and I was happy to do it to the benefit of Donald Trump. However, Corsi fell short of admitting that he was the intermediary between Assange and the Trump campaign.
They're all a bunch of crooks. They are all a bunch of crooks. This whole network of people, from Manafort to Stone to Trump to Trump Jr. to, for that matter, fucking Giuliani.
And Ivanka.
And Ivanka. Ivanka is being looked at into the Trump Tower stuff, because her and Don Jr. were apparently involved in that as well directly. And I was mentioning Giuliani. They're there's the whole thing about Giuliani. Perhaps you remember when Giuliani said he knew something was going to drop soon, right before the Hillary email thing resurfaced, and supposedly there are pressures from the New York division of the FBI and blah blah blah. This whole mess, it's just a fucking massive conspiracy of idiots. You know, but I say conspiracy of idiots because it's kind of falling apart right now, but it fucking worked. They got Donald Trump in the presidency.
But look, let's be honest about this. You know, this is, these guys stumbled into getting Donald Trump into presidency, or that this was this brilliant, like, coordination that helped them get there. I mean, yes, there was things that they did, but there's also a lot of blunders. Things tipped their way in for whatever the hell reasons. You know, the whole email investigation, the Hillary and you know, Comey and all that stuff, adding to that and other stuff, and low voter turnout, this whole damn thing, and boom, but then you wind up with, him.
I mean,
yeah, exactly. So I was
starting to ask, which one of these folks do we think Donald Trump's going to pardon somebody? Do we think we're going to get more indictments? What's next? Or is it just like, who the fuck knows?
I don't know. I don't know.
It seems like what everybody keeps talking about is the wagon circling around Stone, around that guy who you just mentioned, whose name I already forgot again, and around Don Jr. I hear less about Ivanka, but Don Jr.'s name comes up all the time. Eric's been involved in stuff too, and we haven't heard about him in a while.
No, we could all send him to jail and have a fucking jail Christmas.
You know, but I think this is one of those things where, you know, if Mueller has some of those people targeted, he's not going to try to pick them off one by one, because he knows that if he, like, the second, like, let's say Mueller indicts Ivanka for something, do you think Mueller's going to last the day? At that point, Donald Trump pardons Ivanka and fires Mueller.
Okay, but how do you, you know, at the same time, right? What do you think is going to be the net result of that on the other end?
The Democrats yell and the Republicans go, oh, I wish he hadn't done that.
Well, but like you said, it also depends on when they come to the conclusion,
yes,
that he is a political liability.
Yes.
And at some point, when that kind of crap starts happening, especially with how they just got crushed, if that kind of stuff starts happening, it will become far more obvious for a group of them.
Right. My point in that example, though, was I think that if Mueller has the goods on Donald Trump family members, he is going to wait till the very, very end to drop shit. And he will drop them all at once. So if he's going to do something, he's going to, you know, he'll go after Stone, because Donald Trump will be like, oh, what the fuck? Same kind of stuff as Manafort, right? You know, he'll maybe make some whispers about pardoning him later sometime. So Mueller's strategy would be to go after all of these peripheral characters that Donald Trump cares about less. If he's got stuff on the family, he's not going to drop that until he's got nothing else to drop. And then he's going to drop the indictments on every family member on the same day.
Right.
At least that's my prediction, if he goes there. And I think the people who are saying that he is strategically, when he's doing these sort of court statements about, you know, Manafort or Cohen or whatever, he is very carefully releasing what he wants to release to the public through those statements, because he knows, like, his official mandate, if he writes a final report, he's supposed to give that to the Attorney General, and then the Attorney General decides what to do with it, and it may or may not ever see the light of day. So, but these court filings see the light of day immediately. And so I think he's being very deliberate in what he releases in those, as he's sort of step-by-step building the picture of what happened here. Now, one of the things that, and we'll wrap this up shortly, I think, but one of the things that you see here is even now, like, if you listen to the talking heads on TV about the Cohen stuff throughout the day, and I turned it on and off, but, you know, people were stunned in saying how very significant this was and how it starts connecting the dots between Trump and the Russians in a way that we haven't seen before. And this is, and because of the nature of this, it's just an important part of the puzzle, and it makes it much harder to defend Donald Trump. It's the beginning of the end, all kinds of things like that. I saw someone quoted as saying, this is the very first time I've thought there was a non-trivial chance that Donald Trump won't make it to the end of his presidency, things like that. But if you listen to the few Republicans who weren't in complete silence, like you said, they're trying to talk about this as a complete process stuff. It's like, oh, you know, yeah, Cohen made a little lie. It's not, no big deal. It's a process thing. Has nothing to do with Donald Trump, without even getting into, well, what was the lie about? And why would he lie about that? And what was he covering for? Because the whole thing is like, you know, on the Cohen stuff, again, part of this was not just that he admitted he lied. He admitted that he lied for the purpose of making this look better for Donald Trump, because he wanted to minimize the relationships with Russia. Well, why would you want to minimize the relationships with Russia? You know, if as Donald Trump is saying now, I was doing business, I was allowed, it's no big deal, then why the fuck all the attempts to keep it secret at all costs?
Right. Well, I don't, I mean, there, look, I don't, they're,
the bottom line is, of course they're all fucking guilty.
They're all crooked. Yeah.
They're all really crooked. It. They're yeah. all guilty. You know, we'll, who knows what we'll find out about motivations and things like that. My guess, it's all fucking money.
Oh, I totally yeah, agree. It's I like, mean that it's like all
we've said from the very beginning, or when this stuff first started coming out, I was like, look, you know, people get all excited about the Russian espionage and are they talking to spies and blah 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 blah. But if you really want to figure out what's going on, follow the money. It's always follow the money. And I think that's what's going on here too. And it's also Donald Trump fucking said, if you start looking into my business, that's crossing a line.
Right. Which is why I think, you know, look, one of the things is I totally believe that at some point the Democrats in power, they will subpoena to get Trump's tax returns.
Yeah.
I mean, and what's going to happen with that tug of war? And if all his business documents get
expired. Well, like I said last week, the tax returns themselves, I don't know that are going to be all that revelatory. You want to start subpoenaing those business records. You want to doing this thing. And I bet you Mueller's already done a bunch of stuff behind the scenes related to that. And,
oh, sure he has.
You know, there'll be court battles galore and we'd see where those would go. But yeah, the tax returns themselves, I don't think would give us anything we don't already kind of know. It's all in the details.
I gotta tell you, I think that one thing that would be crushing for Trump that would come out in the tax returns is the fact that he's really not that wealthy.
Well, right, but this is already.
Okay, but a lot of people just don't believe it, and they won't believe it until they actually see it on black and white, number one. The second thing is, look, I do think that if his tax returns come out and they show him paying little or no taxes for an extended period of time,
which but we know that too. And we all know that too. And he's already answered that question multiple times and saying, well, that just means I'm smart.
I still think that the fact that it's on paper is still further damaging. It's like we were talking about just nibbling at the margins.
It's like we were talking about earlier in the thing. The general outlines of what's going on here, we've known for a long time now. We know Donald Trump is corrupt. We know his family is corrupt. We know that there's, you know, potential coordination here between Donald Trump's campaign and the Russians in terms of the release of all this stuff. The general outlines of this we've known for a long time. What's getting filled in here are the details and the proof.
Right. Yep.
And those details are interesting. And the proof...
Such as dangling a free condo to... Or attempting to dangle a free... penthouse to Putin.
Yes.
I mean, a $50 million penthouse to Putin.
Now, the theory outlined there was that if Putin had the penthouse, then all the other Russian oligarchs would pay a lot more for condos near Putin.
And the reality is that they're right.
Yes. Now, and that particular statement about that in the article, it seemed to a bunch of the lower level functionaries, like Felix Sater and those folks, proposing that. I don't know how much Donald himself was involved in that or not, but that's the whole thing. Is like,
I mean, the fact that his people were even discussing that is just absolutely insane.
Well, and they were doing it during the presidential campaign as well, just to be clear.
Right. It's absolutely bonkers.
Yes. That's the only thing you can say about that. And, you know, we've had reports in the past about Donald Trump actually being somewhat of a control freak about these things. And so, well, of course he knew, if that's true, you know. But this is the kind of thing that somebody like Mueller has to connect the dots on. Can't just say, well, of course Donald Trump knew. You have to show that he did.
Right.
You know, and then you potentially have to show motive. And what is he trying to do? Is he just trying to get the oligarchs to pay more money for the other condos, and it has absolutely nothing to do with the presidential race and absolutely nothing to do with Russia having leverage over him, et cetera, et cetera? And that's where you start tying it into things like the fact that he kept denying it over and over again, which shows consciousness of guilt and all of this kind of thing. Because if this was all above board and no big deal, he could have just said so. Although, like what we're saying, there's so much of this that he is just saying. He is just putting it out there. And that's actually acting as a shield somewhat, because people discount it because it's public. It can't possibly be as bad as all that, because he just said it.
Right. He's just saying it. So how could it be so bad? Right. Oh man, so crazy. This is just insane. So anyway.
Yeah, I don't think we have anything else to say. I feel like we've been a little bit scattered this show, to be honest, and we haven't given this like fair treatment, but you know.
I don't know.
I feel like when we talk about things like Cohen and Manafort, like I should have come in here with a page full of notes to make sure I hit all the right points in the right order and we were somewhat coherent. I don't have time for that shit. I'm sorry, guys. You know.
There you have it.
So I know I know we've missed stuff, and you probably would have gotten, you know, a better rundown of this stuff by some other place. I don't know, but you know, we have fun. yeah, and I'm just anticipating at this point, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, that we're gonna end the show. We're gonna say goodbye. I'm gonna go to sleep. In the morning, I'm going to work remotely at my, you know, actual day job. And by the time I get to Friday evening, when I'm putting the show together, the whole world will have exploded again. You know, Don Jr. has been indicted, you know, whatever, you know, huge things. And Donald Trump is all apparently depressed about this and canceling meetings at the G20 left and right. And, you know, so he's going to make a fool of himself at the G20 like he always does at these international events. You know, but anyway, things happen, you know, and yeah, fun. Well, anything that happens after we say goodbye now, we'll talk about on next week's show. That's how it works, yes. Right?
That's how it works.
Okay. This has been another episode of Curmudgeon's Corner. Thank you for joining us again. And next week, I should be back in my regular house with my regular microphone and on a regular schedule, and everything will be wonderful, right? in the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us, you know all the usual ways. Facebook.com/Curmudgeon's Corner. See the posts, comment on them. All that kind of stuff. You can reach us on Twitter. I'm at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Yvonne is at I-M-B-O-U. If you really like the show, you can contribute on Patreon, patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner. Send us a little something, and we appreciate sort of the tips if you like the show. And at $2 a month or more, you can get on our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, where throughout the week, Yvonne and I and a bunch of other listeners and sometimes co-hosts are making comments and talking about the news of the day and whatever comes up. It's kind of fun. Let's see, review us on iTunes. And that's enough, isn't it, Yvonne?
Yes, it is.
You know, look, I know this is shorter than our shows have been going recently, but like I said, I'm on the East Coast too this time, and it's 1 a.m, and I'm not used to this like Yvonne is. Yvonne, every week, we're like recording till 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever, and Yvonne's like, just fine. I'm like, and here I am, I'm like, I'm so tired. I want to go to sleep. So anyway, now, of course, after I've said that, I'm going to stop this recording and I'll be up for 2 hours. But, you know, things happen. Yeah. Anyway, have a great week, everybody. And whatever happens in this next week, we'll talk about next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Yvonne.
All right. Good night.
Bye.